It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last week, U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer stood up in front of her colleagues in the House and shared a very personal story. Spoke about what it's like to live with the pain of endometriosis. Endometriosis is a condition that affects about 10% of women in the United States. It causes tissue, similar to the lining of the uterus, to grow in other places in the body. It can be extremely painful, difficult to diagnose, and is very difficult to treat. We're going to find out a lot more about endometriosis this hour. But Representative Finkenauer not only shared her story in front of the House, she announced the launch of the Endometriosis Caucus, and she is with us to talk about it. Representative Finkenauer, thank you so much for being here.
Hey there. Yes, so happy to be here. And again, thank you so much for covering this topic. It's obviously one that's important to me, but also important to women and all the people who love the women who have this all across the country.
What made you decide that right now was the moment to tell your story?
Well, I had been in public office now, this is about 5.5 years. So I was a state rep before Congress, obviously. So I've had, a platform to do this before, but it never occurred to me to share it. It was something obviously really personal and, not something I was actually really comfortable talking about. And all of a sudden, I was about four to five weeks ago, I had just voted on the floor of the House. It was a Friday, and we were voting on Friday and voting on Monday, so short weekend home. I always, mostly go home every single weekend. Everybody I love is in Iowa, so I always look forward to going home every weekend. And I was looking at the flights, and I knew my flight going through Charlotte was pretty delayed, and I actually also happened to have been in a lot of pain after votes. I felt like I was getting it's a pain that I'm really familiar with that can feel like getting stabbed almost in my lower abdomen or in my back. Also felt really tight. Again, it's a familiar feeling to me because I have something called endometriosis, and it's something that'll come up once in a while. It's not a constant thing for me. It'll happen, randomly. You don't really know when it's going to happen, but it can. And this particular day, I remember just going, okay, how am I going to sit in an airport for 8 hours with this? And when I kind of just wanted to stretch my lower back. And so that's when I just was frustrated, because this is something I've had since I was 18, or at least I knew about it since I was 18. I was one of the lucky ones that found out at an early age that I had this. Most women don't know they have it for a long time. So there may be people actually listening right now and hearing me describe this pain, and they may be hearing their pain described for the very first time, because a lot of women are told that that type of pain is just normal for your cycle, and it's not. I mean, that type of severe pain is not normal. It is rare that it happens to me, but it does once in a while, and this was one of the moments I was having one of those flare-ups, and I was just frustrated, and so I started Googling hysterectomy, because that, to me, seemed like the most extreme option, and I was so frustrated at the moment that I still had this.
And many women who have endometriosis end up getting a hysterectomy as a way to stop the pain. There is no cure for endometriosis, but I think the fact that you were searching that term, searching for information on a hysterectomy, I mean, you are a young woman, you're engaged, you hope to be a mother one day, that you must have just felt desperate.
I did. I was just, again, I think the term is just, it's frustration. I was so frustrated and angry that there wasn't better options and that this is what I was looking at when, again, I just got engaged months ago and look forward to having a family in Iowa and got so desperate that I was looking at that. And when I was starting to search hysterectomy, that's when I found the Endometriosis Foundation of America, and I saw all of these facts, and for the first time when it came to endometriosis, I didn't feel alone. That's when I found out it was 1 in 10 women worldwide that have this, that 7 million women in the United States have it. That shocked me. I had no idea. I'm somebody who's lived with this for over a decade and had no idea how many other women had this because it's not something that's talked about. There's really just very little awareness on it. And, you know, again, so many women are dealing with it. And yet I also found out while I was researching it that we fund this at the bottom of NIH. So the National Institute of Health is where a lot of funding goes into research for a lot of different diseases or conditions. So they work towards treatment, they work towards cures, and endometriosis happens to be historically always at the very bottom of NIH funding. And I mean, we're talking 6 million to, you know, 12 million historically for funding. And again, that's really a drop in the bucket compared to a lot of other things. And
it's so, about $1 for every woman who has it.
Yep, exactly. And it shocked me. I had no idea that we were that it was just this ignored. And then when I started looking into, you know, a lot of the different diseases or conditions, they have different caucuses. So you create these issue caucuses where people care about a specific topic. And then with that specific topic, they advocate either for more funding or for more awareness or for more research. And I found out endometriosis didn't have a caucus. And so this was really important for me. I realized that I'm, you know, a sitting member of Congress and I can advocate for these things. And I am in a position to share my story and to draw more awareness to this. And, you know, I just figured it's something that has needed to happen for a really long time, that I knew I wasn't alone in this either, that, again, there are so many women all across the country, in Iowa, I mean, everywhere, that have this, or people who know women who have this. And I know I've been one of the lucky ones who found out early, who I've had now 2 surgeries. I actually had one when I was 18, and then about 6 years after that, I had another one. They're called laparoscope. There's really no great diagnostics for it besides going in and looking and seeing if there are lesions. And that's what, you know, I found out when I was 18. And it wasn't something that I went into lightly either at the age of 18, having that surgery to look. But I was, again, pretty desperate at that point, knowing that I had been to doctor after doctor after doctor. My mom was incredible. And I feel very fortunate to have had a mom who believed my pain.
Well, that's something that's important, yeah. Because a lot of women, as you said earlier, women need to know that this is not how having your period,
yes,
is supposed to feel. But a lot of women are dismissed that way. Oh, you just, yes, have bad cramps. A lot of women go through this. You're fine. Take some Advil.
Yes, exactly. And it's not normal for your cycle or whatever, you know, whatever time of month it is, for you to be feel, you know, have so much pain that you are out for a day or two or even more. And to have that type of severe pain, it should be talked about. And we should educate, especially our young girls, about what this is. There's a lot that goes into this that is just not looked into right now. There is so much gray area here. It is difficult, and it is why we absolutely need more funding when it comes to this. And so it's why it's just very frustrating to see something like this, where 7 million women in the United States have this, and so little has been done for so many years when we've known that this existed since the 1920s.
When you started sharing your story, even though you know the statistics and you know how common this is, have you been surprised by how many women and men have come forward and say, oh, I have this condition, or my wife has this condition, or my sister has this condition?
It's been extraordinary and also heartbreaking. I mean, whether it's been Facebook posts from folks who have heard my story and are now sharing it, or even contacting the office, sharing their stories, and it's women of all ages. It's women who have been through so much, and maybe they're in their 60s, and they're telling me about their story with this, and how maybe they didn't find out until much later in life, or at the very end, they have a hysterectomy, and they find out they've had endometriosis all these years, or, you know, they went through fertility treatments, and they found out it could, you know, it had to do with endometriosis, or, I mean, the pain that women have been through and their stories. Some have had to drop out of the workforce. And, I mean, again, gosh, the stats on that, we lose $80 billion, I believe, annually based on you know, the way this affects women economically, and having, you know, to drop out of the workforce, some women depending again on the severity of it or the stages of it. And it's just, it's extraordinary, again, the stories that women have been sharing with me. And it's not, I mean, whether it's been online or whether it's been, you know, my colleagues in Congress, the amount of people who have connections to people who have this, that has also been just very eye-opening. Whether it's a congressman who told me his wife has it, or a congresswoman who says her sister has it, or a congresswoman who says her comms director has it. You know, again, I will allow, you know, their stories to share, but I'm sure that there are more. And it is something that I think we are now in a position to really bring to light and show, really shine the light on women's health care and the fact that it's just been ignored in Washington for a long time when it comes to funding and when it comes to options. And that's the real thing here. There's just really a lack of options when it comes to this. There's just, you know, not a lot out there, and there needs to be, because so many women go through this. And until we up that funding, you know, the hope is really slim. But that's why, you know, I know I'm in a position right now to talk about something that is personal, that's not always, you know, the most fun to talk about. Trust me, I'd rather be talking about roads and bridges, and that's what I talk about most of the day on transportation infrastructure. And we'll still be talking about roads and bridges and making sure we're bringing those investments to Iowa, but this is also important.
Representative Finkenauer, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Well, thank you. No, thank you. And again, to the women who may have heard their pain described for the first time, I hope they know that they are not alone, and that they should, you know, ask more questions to their doctors. And to the women who have this and who have struggled with it, know again, you are not alone, and we are going to keep fighting here.
U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer, she represents Iowa's 1st District. She recently shared her personal story of living with endometriosis on the House floor as she launched the Endometriosis Caucus. We will find out more about this very common disease in a moment. Dr. Rachel Mejia of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics will be here. We also want to hear your stories. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about endometriosis. It's a condition that affects about 10% of women in the United States between the ages of 15 and 44. It causes tissue similar to the lining of the uterus to grow in other places in the body. It can be extremely painful, difficult to diagnose, and difficult to treat. To help us learn more about this puzzling and very common disease, we've asked Dr. Rachel Mejia of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics to be here. She's a reproductive endocrinologist, director of fertility preservation, and clinical assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology, reproductive endocrinology, and infertility. And she's on the line with us. Hello, Dr. Mejia.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I want to start with kind of a general description of endometriosis, because I gave a brief description, but this is more complicated than I was making it sound. What is endometriosis?
It is complicated. And, you know, unfortunately, because of the, you know, lack of research and overall understanding of this disease, we, you know, have some understanding of it, but overall, there's still a lot to learn. So we do know that we think this arises potentially in multiple different ways, but most likely from what we call retrograde menstruation. So when menses flow is supposed to come out, instead it goes back into the pelvis through the fallopian tubes and then can implant in other areas in the pelvis, and then can cause pain because those areas, those endometrial glands that typically are supposed to be in the uterus are now outside the uterus, can cause pain and symptoms. That's kind of the general idea that we think is causing pain.
So as it fills parts of the pelvis, is it creating connections between organs? Is it sort of gumming things up?
It can. There's various stages of endometriosis, and depending on where these implants occur, whether it's on nerves or the ovaries or bladder, bowel, it can then manifest in various symptoms, such as kind of painful problems with pain with intercourse, pain with bowel movements, and sometimes like radiating pain down the legs if it's kind of implanting on nerves. And then the other big thing that it can cause is infertility, which is also a difficult diagnosis on top of already having the diagnosis of endometriosis.
Is the pain for most women with endometriosis, is that focused around their menstrual cycle?
Most of the pain occurs during that time, but it's not uncommon for women to have pain outside of that period as well, because these lesions can activate based off of the hormones that women produce on a regular basis. And so sometimes even outside of the typical menstrual period, pain can occur, which is frustrating. It's not just 1 week a month. It definitely can occur other times.
Right, even though pain for 1 week a month is pretty serious. Now,
a lot of
women, and we'll hear more about this later in the hour, but a lot of women who experience this kind of pain write it off, at least as first, as, you know, I have bad cramps. This is just part of my monthly cycle. What symptoms should lead a woman to seek medical help?
Yeah, I would say the most important things are that if you're self-treating with things like ibuprofen or non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, you know, Midol, these kind of over-the-counter medications, and it's not helping and you're still having pain, you should see somebody because there's definitely treatments out there, although not perfect, but there's treatments out there that can help lessen the symptoms. And so I would recommend anybody that continues to have pain beyond kind of the over-the-counter medications that they seek pain. Also, pain outside of just the typical menstrual cycle, if you're having pain on other days when you're not menstruating, or pain with intercourse, pain with bowel movements. So something that's outside of kind of the just kind of mild cramps, you know, definitely talk to your gynecologist or your provider about your symptoms, because we want to help.
Now, listening to Representative Finkenauer talk about her pain, she said there was a stabbing in her lower left abdomen and this incredible tension, vice-like tension in her lower back. But I understand that the pain that women with endometriosis experience can be varied. So it's not just those symptoms, right?
Correct. I mean, everybody experiences pain in a different way, and depending on where those lesions are located, or if the ovaries are involved or the bowels involved, it could be that sharp stabbing pain. It could also be a constant dull ache that lasts for a long period of time. So anything that is persistent and lasting for a period of time should definitely be evaluated.
How is it diagnosed? We heard, again, Representative Finkenauer mention that a lot of women who do get diagnosed see on average 8 different doctors before they get a diagnosis. How do we know someone has endometriosis?
Yeah. So the true definitive way to diagnose endometriosis is surgically. However, that surgery isn't always necessary to do right away. We definitely want to try to avoid surgery if we can, and try to treat with medical options and see if we can get the symptoms under control with medical treatment. And if not, then surgery is typically the next step to either diagnose and potentially treat the symptoms. Now, about 70% of women that have, you know, severe pelvic pain, we will find endometriosis, but there are patients that we go in and do surgery on and we still don't necessarily have a diagnosis. So which can be very frustrating.
Let's talk about some of the medical options, because there is no cure for endometriosis, but there are various treatments that give some women relief. So when you start treating a patient with endometriosis, where do you begin?
Right. So one of the mainstays of the treatment is to suppress those implants. And in order to suppress those implants, it's usually a hormonal management. We believe that the tissue that's implanted in the abdomen is very receptive and active to the hormone estrogen, which is produced on a regular basis by women. So we have to try to suppress that ovarian release of estrogen to inhibit the kind of activation of these implants. So one of the most common treatments that we use is the combined oral contraceptive pill. And this, although has hormones, it is suppressing the endogenous or the typical release of hormones by your ovary and helping suppress those implants. And this medication can also be taken what we call continuously. And so meaning that, you know, a typical pill pack has 4 weeks, but that last week are sugar pills or placebo pills. And so what we do is we have women actually start a new pack before they take those sugar pills to even skip their period to avoid the symptoms that sometimes are much worse during their period. So that is typically one of the first line agents because overall the side effect profile for most women is low and has a pretty good efficacy, meaning that it works pretty well.
There, of course, women discover endometriosis at different points in their life. And you mentioned already that this can be linked to infertility. Now, if it's a young woman who discovers that she has endometriosis, I can imagine that fertility would be a big concern. I mean, how does it lead to infertility?
Mm-hmm. So there are multiple different ways mechanistically that we think it does lead to infertility. One of those is if it's severe endometriosis in the sense that there are a lot of what we call adhesions in the abdomen, they can distort the pelvic anatomy. So they can move the fallopian tube, which is supposed to catch the egg released from the ovary, into a different location or cause inflammation. And so then that pathway is distorted. We also think that the inflammation from the endometriosis in the pelvis is probably releasing some different factors, tumor necrosis factors and interleukins that is causing an inflammatory state, which may be impacting the egg or the embryo.
We are talking about endometriosis this hour, a painful and common condition that affects about 10% of women in the United States between the ages of 15 and 44. March is Endometriosis Awareness Month. And with me right now is Dr. Rachel Mejia of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And I know that you work with a lot of women with fertility issues. Is that a common moment where a woman might learn that she has endometriosis? Maybe she has dismissed this pain as bad cramps over the years, but then can't conceive.
Yes, that is oftentimes the case in some of these what we call unexplained infertility, where we don't necessarily have a diagnosis. Because in years past, a lot of women would just undergo laparoscopies for a workup for infertility, and now that isn't considered the standard of care, and so. Even patients that what we call asymptomatic or weren't having symptoms at all or don't have severe pain but just maybe have mild painful periods actually at the time they, you know, are diagnosed with infertility may also be diagnosed with endometriosis.
If this is part of your experience, you're welcome to join the conversation with your questions, with your experiences. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We talked earlier about the possibility of using oral contraceptives to reduce the amount of estrogen a woman is producing, to reduce the amount of pain that she might experience with endometriosis. Obviously, if a woman is fighting for her fertility, that's not an option. How do you treat a woman with endometriosis who wants to get pregnant?
This is a hard clinical conundrum that we deal with. And typically in the case of infertility and endometriosis, we have to, you know, really discuss what is the priority right now in this time of your life. And if the priority is infertility, you know, we focus on that and try to help the woman get pregnant, because oftentimes pain actually improves during pregnancy because of the relative production of hormones. There's kind of very high levels of estrogen, but there's also very high levels of progesterone. So many women do very well during pregnancy that have endometriosis.
I've also read that part of a fertility treatment that is common is to put a woman into a temporary menopause. And then once that's lifted, that seems to increase her odds of getting pregnant. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so the medication I believe you're referring to is called Luprolide or Depo-Lupron, and it puts women into a state of menopause. The side effects are pretty significant, with hot flashes and maybe some mood swings. And, you know, overall, the data on that is a little bit conflicted in the true benefit of that. And, you know, as a group, we typically don't recommend that because it's actually delaying their fertility, and the likelihood of actually improving is not that good based off the kind of one bigger study out there. So that is an option, but a lot of people aren't interested in that medication because of the side effects, as well as the delaying of trying to get them pregnant. But that is definitely an option.
Now, Representative Finkenauer also mentioned that when she was at her lowest point, she actually Googled hysterectomy, thinking, if I just get a hysterectomy, this pain will be over. Again, that's not a cure for endometriosis. When would a hysterectomy be considered as treatment?
So hysterectomy, with or without removal of the ovaries, is would only be considered for treatment if we'd had, one, failed everything else. Also, the woman needs to be done childbearing and know that that's not, you know, something that they desire in the future. And it needs to be a decision taken with, you know, great care, because it is a major surgery and, you know, may be beneficial. But also, if some of the other medications haven't helped, the concern that the surgery may not be helpful is also a concern.
That seems counterintuitive to me. How is that possible that getting a hysterectomy wouldn't stop this?
So the ovaries, if you leave the ovaries, those are the hormone. The gonads are still producing hormones. And so those can still continually activate the lesions within the pelvis or abdomen. Actually, the rate of recurrence of endometriosis is pretty high, probably 30-40% when the ovaries are left in place, and women also have to actually end up going at another surgery if they only have their uterus removed.
When a woman goes through menopause, does that stop the pain of endometriosis?
Typically, this is typically considered a disease of kind of reproductive age women, which is why oftentimes those medications such as the Depo-Lupron can help. And there is a new medication out on the market called Elagolix or Elisa that is what we call a GnRH antagonist. And this has also been shown to be pretty effective for women with endometriosis. Unfortunately, right now, it's still an expensive medication, and so getting it for patients has been a challenge, but we're working with insurance companies and also hoping to get a research trial going at the University of Iowa to be able to test this drug further.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Dr. Rachel Mejia of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She is a reproductive endocrinologist. And in a moment, we're also going to hear a personal story from a woman who's been living with endometriosis since she was 14 years old. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about endometriosis, a condition that affects about 10% of women in the United States. Endometriosis causes tissue similar to the lining of the uterus to grow in other places in the body. It can be extremely painful, difficult to diagnose, and it's extremely difficult to treat. Chris Byerly from Ankeny was diagnosed with endometriosis when she was in her 20s, but she's had symptoms since she was 14 years old, and she is with me now. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Thank you so much for talking about this with us. And take us back to when you were 14 years old. Tell us what you experienced that led you to think there was something wrong.
Well, it was tough. Each month when I would have my period, it would sometimes have me bedbound. The pain would be so excruciating. I was very active in sports, and I had to plan a lot of things around my periods, unfortunately, and had to cancel out a lot of things because of it.
And when you talked to your doctor about what you were experiencing, what kind of a response did you get?
Just that was normal, and I'd get prescriptions for painkillers or birth control pills, something along those lines.
You had to know it wasn't normal because your friends weren't experiencing the same thing.
Exactly. It didn't seem normal for me, maybe, but it didn't seem normal in general. Like it was something that was supposed to happen every month like that, to that degree of difficulty.
You finally got a diagnosis of endometriosis when you were in your 20s. What led to that diagnosis?
I finally just got fed up, and I heard that I could have a laparoscopy that would remove some of the tissue if I did, in fact, had endometriosis, and I would actually get diagnosis once and for all and hopefully be able to treat it a little bit better.
Did you already suspect that you had endometriosis before you got the diagnosis?
Yes, I did.
So had you been doing research on your own to try to figure out what was going on?
Yeah, as much as I could. Back then, there wasn't a whole lot available.
When was this?
This was back in the 80s.
So when you finally got that diagnosis, there wasn't a whole lot of information available, I can imagine, even after the diagnosis. What did that mean to you to have the diagnosis?
Well, it meant quite a bit that I wasn't crazy. I actually had something for sure, you know, that had a name. But unfortunately, it meant just having surgery every so many years to clean things out and to unstick all the organs. It didn't get much better at that point.
We have talked a lot about how endometriosis works on this program, but when you have this tissue removed, can you tell me what that experience is like? What's the surgery like?
It's the belly button surgery that they typically call it. They go in and they make a couple other incisions. It's not too bad a surgery to get over, but unfortunately, they have to get all the tissue for it to really work, and that's what's been so difficult, is finding the surgeon that can actually get every last little bit of it. Otherwise, you're right back where you started 2 months later.
Wow. Tell me, in your experience, because I know that a lot of women with endometriosis have very different experiences, but give me an idea of the kind of pain that you've had to deal with because of this condition?
Well, I think the best way to describe it is when I did have my child and went through childbirth. I went through natural childbirth, and I thought it was relatively easy compared to the pain that I was having every month.
Wow. How has endometriosis changed for you over time? Because some of the things that you go through, like childbirth, can change the disease.
Well, it kind of gave me little bitty breaks. I did nurse my son for a year after I had him, and so I did get a little bit of a break from it then. But it eventually, you know, would come back and come back with a vengeance, of course. I didn't initially have issues with a lot of bleeding, which that became more of an issue the older I got, and I had more involvement with endometriosis in the lining of my uterus. And then I also developed fibroids, so it just kind of kept getting worse and worse, and I was kind of waiting for menopause to fix it.
Fibroids are growths within the uterus. Is that a common problem that women with endometriosis also deal with?
It seems to be, yeah. It kind of all ties together.
A lot of women with endometriosis do resort to having a hysterectomy, but you've chosen not to do that. Why?
Right. I kind of wanted to be as natural as possible, and I kept thinking that if I could just get everything to work correctly and get myself cleaned out, that would be the best way to deal with it, because I didn't want to have side effects from having hysterectomy too young in life.
You finally had another procedure to help with your endometriosis. Tell me about that.
I had uterus reconstruction, where I had 2/3 of my lining removed, and I also had 22 fibroids removed. When I had that surgery, I had no other endometriosis. It was all just in the lining at that point.
And how has that worked? Is that something that has given you long-term relief?
Yes, that surgery was about 2 years ago, and it was the last one relating to my endo that I had, and I felt fantastic. I was up until that point, I had been bleeding every 2 weeks. Unfortunately, a year later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And breast cancer is also something that women with endometriosis seem to be at higher risk for.
Yes, and that is also something that I think in the early years they didn't know as much about that as they do now.
How is your health now?
I'm pretty good. I've got clean scans right now.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
So
yes, you've been through so much over the years, and it sounds like, especially early in your journey, it was very difficult for you to get any answers. What do you want people to know about endometriosis?
Just that it's a real disease, and to not mess around, to just get it under control the best you can, as soon as you can, because it will take over your life.
When you say it's a real disease, do you feel like a lot of women that deal with endometriosis aren't believed?
Yes, I think there's that fine line between, oh, it's just a regular period. That's all it is. It's not a big deal.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
You bet you.
Chris Byerly of Ankeny. She has been dealing with endometriosis since she was 14 years old. We're talking about endometriosis this hour. It is Endometriosis Awareness Month. It's a disease that affects approximately 10% of women, a very common, often very painful disease. And you are welcome to join the conversation. If you have experiences with endometriosis or questions, 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Still with us, Dr. Rachel Mejia of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She is a reproductive endocrinologist and director of fertility preservation. And Dr. Mejia, listening to Chris's story, there are so many things that I want to talk to you about. And one is that she feels like she was experiencing symptoms of endometriosis when she was 14 years old. And I'm sure that a lot of young girls who experience that kind of pain have an extra difficult time getting diagnosed. Do you think that this is harder for women who are 15, 16 years old to get someone to pay attention to?
Yes, I definitely think it's a very hard age group, and it's actually a big part of my patient population as well, as are these adolescents that are really struggling with pain and, their primary care providers or their pediatricians, are hearing them, but aren't sure the best way to manage, and so they often get referred to our adolescent gynecology clinic. And for a lot of these girls, it is very hard to not know what is going on and understand why is this happening to me and what is causing this. And I often move to, if we need to do a laparoscopy kind of in the early stages, if we've tried multiple options for medical management, and we do move towards a laparoscopy to help know, do we think this is endometriosis? And it often does help them move forward and us move forward and working together to come up with a treatment plan for both their parents and them to know what's going on.
Yeah, we have an email from a listener who says, my 16-year-old daughter suffered for almost 2 years from very painful periods and then erratic bleeding. After repeated visits to a major healthcare system in the Midwest, we sought out help at the University of Iowa, and she was diagnosed with endometriosis. She would be so happy to hear Dr. Mejia. She is our hero. She has finally found relief. Orlissa and birth control have been a godsend. She's finally participating in life again, which we are so grateful for. I too suffered at her age, but we just didn't talk about it back then. I got a diagnosis at 24. I'm so impressed with Abby Finkenauer and her bravery. I'm thankful that my daughter can talk about it, and it isn't as taboo as it was for me. And Dr. Mejia, do you feel like there is a taboo that is being lifted? I mean, this is something that a lot of women have kept to themselves.
Yes, I do. We've been seeing more and more women in clinic coming and telling us, hey, this is going on and I need help and opening up about some of these things they've had a hard time talking about in the past. And yeah, I definitely commend Congresswoman Finkenauer for bringing this to the forefront and increasing the awareness of it.
Lauren is on the line with us from East Moline. Hello, Lauren.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What's your story?
Well, so I have endometriosis. When my husband and I got married about 9 years ago, we had a doctor tell me, well, you might have it, but don't worry about it unless you have trouble getting pregnant. We got pregnant with my daughter 3 years later after one miscarriage. And then about 5 years later, we were still struggling with getting pregnant with our second. And I went to see a local doctor, Dr. Jessica Kreswick, here in the Quad Cities, and she is incredible. And she was the first person to really confirm. Yeah, she's great. She was the first person to really confirm you have endometriosis and infertility associated with it. And I'm so grateful for her. And she's really been working with me, but it's been a big piece of grief for us to have to wrestle with the fact that no one told us a long time ago, hey, this is something you really need to get under control. Does that make sense? They said, if you can't get pregnant, you should deal with it then. But a lot of times, by the time you have infertility associated with endo, you're too far into the disease to really take it back, if that makes sense.
Oh, Lauren, yeah, thank you so much for your call and for sharing that story. Dr. Mejia, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Lauren, that it's one of the most difficult times to manage endometriosis is when the infertility aspect is on board, too, because there's grief associated with infertility and then grief associated and with the pain. And so it is a challenging to kind of move forward past that. And, I'm thankful that there are great providers out there that can recognize the importance of managing the fertility aspect of this.
So we only have a few minutes left, and I want to ask you, we heard early in the show, Abby Finkenauer talking about the fact that this is a disease that is not funded very well by the National Institutes of Health. It's something that we're not putting a lot of research dollars into, at least on that level. As a doctor who treats women with endometriosis, do you feel that? Do you feel like we're not doing enough to find out how to treat this disease?
Yeah, it's definitely a balance, and I'm glad that I'm not the one that has to make those decisions about the money and where that money goes. But yes, I do feel like we need more information, more research in this area, you know, especially for, you know, the adolescent groups and kind of all age groups, but some of these really more challenging and complicated areas. And why is this happening so soon to adolescents when they've only been having periods for maybe a year? You know, and how quickly this disease can progress. So yeah, we do need more research, and you know, we're hoping to do a trial with the Oralisa medication at the University of Iowa.
If you have a child who experiences extreme pain with her periods or some of these symptoms, what should you do as a parent?
I think the most important thing is making sure that, you know, your child feels comfortable talking, you know, to you about it, and then reaching out and getting help, reaching out to, you know, first your doctor. And if you're not getting answers, be an advocate for yourself and your child, and, you know, seek further options in terms of providers that do deal with endometriosis specifically and can help.
And if you're listening today and you're a woman and think, wow, I've never been diagnosed with endometriosis, but this sounds like what I've experienced. Again, what advice do you have for people?
You're not alone, and there are options out there. You know, although none of them are perfect, there are treatment options, and I would encourage you to seek care so that you don't have to live your life, you know, with this constant pain.
10% of all women, we believe, have endometriosis. That seems like such a high number. Do you think that this is a disease that people haven't heard about, again, because of that taboo, because we haven't felt comfortable talking about female troubles?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily increasing in prevalence. It's been, you know, fairly constant, but I think in general, yeah, women can have a hard time talking about their concerns and feeling like they're being listened to by their doctors. And so hopefully we can overcome some of that with this push from Congresswoman Abby Finkenhauer.
Dr. Rachel Mejia, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Rachel Mejia of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. We've been talking about endometriosis this hour, a common and painful disease. It affects approximately 10% of women in the United States. This is Endometriosis Awareness Month, and we've had a conversation, learned a great deal about this condition. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.